The Canadian Tar Baby. News from Radio EcoShock. As a self-styled progressive country, Canada just hosted the Kyoto and Climate Convention meetings in Montreal last December. Various government ministers, including Prime Minister Martin himself, made speeches and twisted arms for international action on climate change. But under the hood, Canada remains the SUV gas guzzler. Under the Kyoto Protocol, Canada promised to reduce its greenhouse gas emissions to 6% below the 1990 levels by the year 2012. Instead, Canada has constantly added more and more greenhouse gases. In 2005, it was a whopping 24% above 1990 levels. Canadians drive incredible distances in gas-hungry vehicles, waste tons of carbon through leaky, inefficient homes and commercial buildings, and always leave the lights on everywhere. When it comes to belching greenhouse gases, Canadians are just Americans with a glossy green self-image. But here is the worst part. Who is the number one carbon pusher to the United States? Alrighty now, for all the life on Earth, here's your question. Who is the biggest energy supplier to the world's biggest climate polluter?
Saudi Arabia.
Venezuela.
Alex, I think it's Canada.
While spouting rhetoric about clean energy and global action, Canada is the number one carbon drug pusher to America. From Newfoundland offshore oil platforms in the Atlantic, from new fields in the western provinces, through new billion-dollar pipelines running like black rivers to American refineries, Canada feeds the needs of the world's largest carbon polluter. If Americans are addicts, Canada is certainly the drug pusher. Now Canada has found a seemingly inexhaustible source of oil, billions of barrels, enough to send the Earth's climate into a blazing hell full of storms, or perhaps to tip the planet into the new ice age. While Canadians cheer and U.S. Republicans cozy up to a war-free carbon fix, the entire biosphere is threatened by the Canadian tar sands. What are the tar sands? Can they really power the world for centuries? Is it worth scraping away vast areas to do it? If you like living in a world suitable for animals, you need to know about the Canadian tar baby. Let's go straight to oil industry sources. There is a fine three-part series on Alberta's tar sands in Greenwire, starting August 18, 2005. You can find Greenwire at www.eenews.net/greenwire.php. The series was republished in another good insider source called RigZone at www.rigzone.com. The facts. Alberta is a gigantic province on the western edge of the Canadian prairies. It is so rich in regular oil and gas fields that Albertans receive a check from their government. The province has no debt whatsoever and boasts a multi-billion dollar rainy day fund. Alberta produces 70% of Canada's oil, 80% of its natural gas, and receives three-quarters of the billions of tax dollars given away to multinational oil companies every year to encourage them to mine more carbon. In the north, a frontier town called Fort McMurray is the center of one of the most staggering engineering and mining exploits ever seen on the planet Earth. Foreign-owned companies, mostly American, are engaged in strip mining and drilling 54,000 square miles, ripping away the surface of the earth in an area the size of Florida, just to keep those Hummers going for the commute. 120 million years ago, the detritus of plant life from another carbon-rich age became worked into sand to form a sticky black goo 50 to 100 feet below the current landscape of boreal forest, swamps, and lakes. These are the tar sands, also known as the oil sands. According to the Alberta government, there are 1.6 trillion, that's a trillion, barrels of oil locked up in this substance called bitumen. There are 175 billion barrels of oil of proven reserves ready for today's technology to grab, making the Alberta tar sands second only to Saudi Arabia. At present, 29 companies are pulling out 1 million barrels a day, almost all of it going to the United States. Corporations say that production will triple by 2015, making the Alberta tar sands the fifth largest oil producer in the world. As oil prices rise, the tar sands become more and more attractive. A whole string of U.S. congressmen and officials have already visited the Alberta operations. Even Dick Cheney was slated to tour the Black Bonanza. Major corporations like Shell have already pumped billions and billions of dollars into development of the tar sands. But getting the oil out of the sticky sand isn't cheap or good for the environment. The oil is locked in. requiring a complex system to crack it away. That process needs whole rivers of water and entire natural gas fields just to get the oil ready for refineries. Experts expect that by 2010, that's just 4 years away, oil sands production alone will take up 12% of the total energy allowed under the Kyoto Protocol for Canadian use. That is, the tar sands operations themselves produce massive amounts of carbon waste before a single gallon reaches consumers. The black gold rush has pummeled local Aboriginal tribes and opened a flood of crummy fast food chains and strip malls to serve the oil workers. Houses in Fort McMurray, previously worth $60,000, now cost up to $500,000. Thousands of workers are sharing accommodations bunked up while working insane hours for a strip mining operation that runs 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All this is the model for U.S. politicians and oil lobbyists, like Senator Orrin Hatch, that want similar production from the oil-bearing shales in the American Rocky Mountains, including in parklands and public lands. The Energy Policy Act of 2005 was loaded with corporate goodies for anyone wanting to rip the shale out of the mountains and melt it down for oil. Back in the Badlands, the world's largest 400-ton trucks, more than two stories high, haul away the black goo from equally gigantic shovel machines. Sometimes they mine it, but most of the time they strip it away up to 100 feet of the land, which they haul away into gigantic slag heaps. The tar sands have to be crushed and then turned into a mobile slurry with amazing amounts of water. The slurry is passed through furnaces almost as hot as the sun and pressed with hydrogen, which unites with the carbon to form a hydrocarbon. But what is the source of all this hydrogen? It comes from natural gas from Canada's north. So this cleaner-burning fuel is wasted to create the dirtier oil. Canadians have heard about the proposed giant Mackenzie Valley pipeline to bring natural gas south from the Arctic. But gas-hungry Canadians and Americans will never see it for their heating. The entire production of the new pipeline would be sucked up by the Alberta Tar Sand Companies. The National Energy Board of Canada estimates that the whole process, from mining to processing, uses up 500,000 cubic feet of natural gas to produce a single barrel of bitumen, which needs still more energy for refining into oil. One barrel, 500,000 cubic feet of cleaner natural gas burned up and pumped out into the atmosphere. Incidentally, due to the tar sands, Canadian technicians are learning more about handling hydrogen. For one thing, there are hydrogen storage facilities close enough to homes and energy operations to create the equivalent of a hydrogen bomb if accidentally or purposefully touched off. Another big risk. Almost every multinational oil company is involved. One of the big producers, Syncrude, is owned by a consortium that includes Imperial Oil, Petro-Canada, ConocoPhillips, and Murphy Oil. Shell is also a major player, operating its own massive tar sands facilities. Where the land cannot be easily stripped away due to overlying rock, the companies drill down and inject gigajoules of heat, again from the natural gas burners, to melt the tar below enough to pump it up. The corporations spend a few million dollars explaining how green they are, while hauling away billions of dollars in profits and product. Stephen Hazel of the Sierra Club of Canada told Greenwire, "When they talk about how well they're doing, it's in the context of the filthiest industry one can imagine. I can't think of another industry that causes so much damage." So, the big machinery strips away entire forests and landscapes, leaving barren holes as lifeless as the moon. Then they truck in some of the slag and try to smooth it over and replant something. Nothing natural is left. Even the recovery efforts use up massive amounts of energy as diesel equipment moves mountains of materials. Syncrude says it reclaims about 740 acres a year. They have thousands of acres to go as they operate the largest crude oil production in Canada, amounting to 13% of all the energy used by Canadians, except the oil doesn't go to Canadians, but to their wealthier cousins to the south. Sulfur pours out of the processing plants, creating more acid rain. Just one company, Syncrude, pumps out 245 metric tons of sulfur dioxide every day. The Shell Tar Sands project adds millions of tons of sulfur to the atmosphere every year. Syncrude produced about 700 tons of sulfuric acid as well, the second largest source in Canada. The tailing ponds, really tailing lakes, are left while most of the noxious chemicals settle to the bottom. Toxic lakes loaded with chemicals like toluene and trimethylbenzene. Syncrude released 480 tons of toluene into the environment in a single year, the largest source of this deadly chemical in Canada. Just dumped into the environment, for free. The whole underground water system has been wiped out. much of the Athabasca River is being rerouted to oil plants because it takes at least 2 barrels of water to produce a single barrel of oil. The Pembina Institute estimates the tar sands are currently using enough water to service the needs of a city of 2 million people. And it all comes out the other side dirty and polluted with persistent chemicals. You can get a full report on the oil sand fever from pembina.org. The ground-level insects, plants, and fungi have been destroyed. The plan is to replace it all with artificial rolling hills with grassland someday. Meanwhile, the former residents are unsettled. The caribou, moose, and deer flee the constant noise and the confusion of pipelines, pads, and pumps crisscrossing their former habitat. The wolves follow the pipeline cuts to find easy access to their prey, and mega flocks of migratory birds land in the toxic lakes. Like George Bush in America, Alberta's government has steadfastly opposed the Kyoto Protocol. They just want more and more oil production and more provincial revenues, no matter what happens to the Earth's delicate climate. Damn the hurricanes, the Arctic, and the species. Haul away the land and the animals. We need more oil! More oil! More oil!
This report from Radio EcoShock, ECO, shock like an electric shock, .org.